This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Gary, for that very kind introduction, and welcome to all of you. The discussion ahead of us here of creating church culture is a discussion or is a topic of great interest to me. Spent some time working on culture over the past number of years, and so what this presentation will be kind of a shrinking of, I don't know, something that should take a week to discuss, but we'll do okay here with it, I think. Bouncing off of Merle's presentation this morning, rich, wonderful, I couldn't agree more. The piece that has always troubled me is, do we feel that way on Sunday morning, sitting beside brother so-and-so and sister so-and-so in this great kingdom of God that is being built, and so forth and so on? Here I am, and here's brother so-and-so, and I don't like the way he sings, and I don't like the way he smells, and I don't like the way he does a whole lot of other things. Then what? Church culture. I didn't think years ago that culture was as important as I now have come to believe that it is. In fact, I have learned by now when somebody says, oh, that's just cultural, to immediately prick up my ears, because it's not just cultural. It means if it is cultural, there's something pretty deep about it. But I'll have to move quickly here. You see on the screen something that is not on your paper, and that is, are we doing okay with sound? I just hear a little ringing. Testing, is it okay? Okay, ringing a little. I don't know if there's somebody who can fix that a tad bit. You could just keep kind of working at it, and I'll keep going here if I can. So, yes, you see there a Petri dish. In my 40 years of teaching, I did a little teaching of biology over the years. And this dish that you see in front of you is a dish of cultured bacteria. So a certain medium there, I'll just let you, I won't complain anymore. Whatever you get done will be okay. They say it's better, so good. So a Petri dish, it has probably an agar medium there. And the little strokes that you see back and forth were the researcher's intention was likely to grow some cultured bacteria and do something with it. Unfortunately, he had a problem with it. You can see there in the top about 12 o'clock, a mold culture, and it's actually labeled here. I know, a little low for some of you to see there. It's a penicillin culture. The fascinating thing that is this. Around it, you see just at the periphery, just an area where the bacteria have all died. Do you see that? Do you see that little rim around there? Well, now the notes on your paper then reference this, because 1928, Alexander Fleming, Petri dish, culture medium, a bacteria, a mold, as you see. And the result was, because of the very careful observations of Alexander Fleming, the miracle drug known as penicillin came into existence. Some of us likely would not be here if it would not have been true that somebody paid attention to culture. If you know the story, you know that Fleming walks into the research laboratory. He's wanting a particular bacteria, and here my culture's been ruined. But on looking at it a second time and thinking about, well, what's this? What's that little rim? All right, enough said about Fleming and penicillin. What lessons have we learned? A couple words here. As you can see, we could some of you preachers here could preach on each one of these little pieces, the whole sermons, very, very easily. Pathogens, those are disease-producing, antibiotics, sterilization. In fact, all of this has something to do with what actually grows in a culture. My main point to begin with, if you walk out of here with nothing else, culture matters. It matters deeply. The translation or the transition from what you heard Brother Merle saying this morning in an actual reality in a congregation of believers where people really are living a kingdom life, much depends on what has actually been built there culture-wise in that church. Matthew chapter 13, a couple other passages here. Here's a couple of passages that got me onto this. The first one, salt and light, Matthew chapter 5, 14 and 16, 14 through 16. Ye are the salt of the earth. Ye are the light of the world. You know the passage, I could quote it here. But just think on it a bit. What are we talking about? That aura that goes out, not just from us personally, but from a church. From the gathered body of believers. Culture and its effects on the world around you. The parable of the sower, if we had the time, I would actually read that passage, have you think about it, ask some questions. But the primary question is this. In that parable, what part of it do you have the most control over? You don't have to answer. I'll answer for you. Soil. So the seed is the seed. The sower is a sower, and we want something to grow in that medium. The part that is the most, that we have the most influence on, is that soil. As Brother Gary said, I'm a half farmer. I enjoy farming, and I happen to know that the soil conditions are extremely important. That's the one thing that you as pastors, you as parents, teachers, we have the opportunity to work on that soil so that when the seed drops, it actually grows. Culture matters. That's the point here. Building on the gospel foundation, 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Now, actually, I have a few notes there for you. Oh, incidentally, the numbering is a little strange there. If you're on page 1, you go 1, 2 from where you're at. 1, 2, 3, 4 on the slides, okay? Just so you can see how that is numbered down through there. So the parable of the sower, mentioning that, soil, character formation through life habits, all of these, again, deserve an awful lot of development. I might just drop in this piece. One of the reasons I'm a teacher for 40 years is because I know this is important. Character formation through life habits. Soil, cultural formation through family, community practices, and traditions. More about that a little bit later. But the main point, again, here to begin with, culture matters. Here's a little sequence that I don't have time to talk about because it would take at least a half an hour. But you can see that I have highlighted here heroes. And we'll come back to that a little bit later. Story to heroes, to values, to passion, to impact. A little bit of a summary, really. I'd like for you to look or think with me on 1 Corinthians 3. You know the passage again. But let me just comment. I'll read it first and then comment on it. According to the grace of God, Paul speaking, which is given unto me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation and another buildeth thereon. And then a key phrase here, but let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. In verse 11, Men of Simon's favorite verse. For other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, here's the fascinating thing to me. Almost every time I have heard a sermon preached out of 1 Corinthians chapter 3, including sermons that I preach, I'll key in on verse 11. But you know, it's not the main point. It is not the main point of the passage. Now, it has to be there for the passage to mean anything. But the main point is what's in yellow there. But let every man be careful how he builds on top of this foundation. Do you see do you see church building here? Do you see culture creation? Do you see culture formation? He goes on in the passage, if you're familiar with it, with the wood hay stubble story and so forth and so on. It says, look, the fire will try it. And then a curious insertion there, he says, for some it'll be burned up, but so as they'll be saved. I'll let Brother Ben back there explain that to you, and you'd ask him. He knows what to say about that. But the point is, be careful how you build on this foundation, which is Christ Jesus. And that's my focus here. That's what we're talking about here today. Now, just to be sure that we're not misunderstood at the point, the next set of slides, I know that some of this gets just a little bit fuzzy for you because of the way this prints out, okay? But just to be sure you get the point here, ye must be born again. Don't hear in what I share with you today and ignoring of that foundation. None of this means anything unless we begin here. Okay, and I just want to be very, very clear on that. If we're starting somewhere else, we're starting at the wrong place. So the foundation first, personal sanctification. And what's the goal of personal sanctification? Ephesians chapter 4, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. This is discipleship. Incidentally, my assumption here is that much of this group is gathered because we're thinking about church in foreign settings or outside of our immediate community, even though I think much of this applies to the immediate community. I'm working hard on this in my church, okay? Why do I bring this up here? Well, one of the pieces that we as an Anabaptist people have done reasonably well with, not perfectly by any means, is we do see that need to move on to personal sanctification, some change of the life. So that third, the creation of Christian culture through the church community. And I just want you to see that sequence and note that the arrow goes this way, not the other. Okay, so the kingdom of God, Jesus reigns. The reality works from the bottom up. It works from the foundation up through this creation of church culture, church community that we're talking about. So be sure that you pick up on that piece, the importance of the foundation. Unfortunately, sometimes we try to do it the other way. The other way doesn't work. Okay? So if you think that you will build Christian culture and then through that we'll get people saved, well, I just need to tell you, it's very, very easy to slip into some kind of legalistic pattern if you go this way. Okay, that's just a disclaimer, so we'll let that one go. This also is just extras today. It's not really the main section. I'll get to the main section here in just a few minutes, Lord willing. Here's some notes. It's important for every church, I'm talking about the local assembly, who's gathered together to identify core virtues and core values. What's at the core? What is it that we actually want? What's our vision here? What's our view? I'm not going to take time to walk through that, but I think that every church should sit down and not just assume that they already know what these are. What are the core values, core virtues, and so on. Just for example, one of ours is clearly a work ethic. Maybe you don't think it's religious enough. Maybe you don't think it's spiritual enough. I don't know. I know one thing. In this group, a core value is a work ethic. Well, don't ignore it. That's part of your culture. And that's part of what you take with you wherever you go. Okay? Now, here's some danger. This just, as I said, extras for you. In respect to culture, so my main point here to begin with was culture matters. Okay, well, if it matters, then we better think about how we're interacting with it. And here's just a couple of ways. So integration mode, identify yourself here. any church, it doesn't matter if it's a foreign church or if it's a church here at home, you always have a certain number of people who are in integration mode. Okay, what do we mean? Well, adapting to and coasting toward the norms of whatever the mainstream cultural practice is. You didn't hear me throw a stone at it. You just heard me saying that you will always have, in every group of people, you'll have a certain number of people who are in integration mode. Okay, second, defensive mode. Idealizing local culture, ignoring faults and even fatal flaws. Now, I'll just really be fair with you. I identify myself right here. It's easy to get me, and those of you who know me know this is true. You can get me to defend the local conservative Mennonite Anabaptist practices just at the drop of a hat. I'll defend them. Here's the thing. It's helpful to know that. It's helpful for me to know that's where I'm at, because since I know that, I can make a little bit of correction to know that I will. Oh, that's my default mode. I'm going to go there. And it can blind me at times. Okay, you follow that? Third, reactive mode, reacting to specifics, ignoring the strengths of core virtues and values. So when you hear somebody reactionary mode, they're almost always going to raise some issue that is relatively unimportant and miss the fact that there are core virtues and core values that are integrated and involved with that peripheral thing that they're out there trying to discredit. Because listen, every culture has its pieces to it that don't make sense. Okay, they just don't add up. Every culture is that way. Don't think that that's something that is just true of conservative Anabaptist cultures. That's not the case. Everyone does. Okay, watch out for reactive mode. Once you jump into reactive mode, you get really blind to a whole lot of things. So I've seen that over and over and over again. And finally, failure to recognize the roots relationships between specifics and core virtues and values. I should just push the pause button for a moment. This is the one that oftentimes gets us into trouble. So if you take a little piece of a culture out, pull it out, set it over here somewhere to examine it, just all of itself, not in its context, but just by itself, it oftentimes looks very foolish. Okay? Beware of trying to do that. When you pull it out, you set it aside. It's worth doing, but it's a mind game. Okay, it's not really real, because the moment you pull it out and you set it over here and start to examine it, and it's just by itself. It's like a piece of a puzzle out of the puzzle, set over here somewhere. You're trying to, what sense does that piece of puzzle make? Nothing. Put it back in the puzzle. You say, it needs to be there to actually get the full picture. Okay? You're not hearing me say that there are not pieces dangling around in cultures off and on that just simply need to be lopped off. Of course, that happens. But be careful, it's not a piece of the puzzle that you want to chuck away that is going to ruin the picture. I have to think of my wife every time I think of this, because you know what she does is she puts a puzzle together. She loves to put puzzles together. I hate them. Oh, I hate puzzles. But she loves to put them together. She gets them all together, and for some reason or another, if there's one piece lost, she throws it in the trash can. So there's no use keeping that puzzle. If it doesn't have all the pieces to it, just get rid of it. Maybe that's just her, but I find it kind of fascinating. Think of the puzzle image when you think of this issue. It's a useful one to get a little bit of a handle on this fourth point. Okay, too much time spent there, but I need to move on here. Here's a definition that I use for culture. It's the aggregate. There's your puzzle again. The aggregate heart expression. Notice heart expression. Of a community's love/values that orders the affairs of daily life and defines a community's concept of meaning, personal significance, and identity. A big sentence there, a lot packed into that, and I don't want to, again, take too much time with it. Values, this is an important definition. This is why I use the word values, because you're going to see me use it here rather strongly in just a minute or two. The heart loves plus heart loyalties that dictate life priorities and life passions. Those are your real values. A couple questions. What do you love? Why do you love them? To whom or what are you loyal? Are first things truly at the top of the to-do list? This fascinates me when we talk about what's first. I've heard people use this idea, my family's first. And they use that to say that they don't have time to teach the Sunday school class on Sunday or study for it. I've heard that on occasion. Same person will then turn right around to do something on Wednesday evening that might be something we wouldn't be all, I don't know, to go to a softball game or who knows what. You need to really learn to be honest with that one. What subject keeps you awake and what do you talk about the most? I'm going to skip over the next slide, even though it speaks for itself, the standard, the end result, unto a perfect man, unto the measure, the stature, the fullness of Christ. This is a name. Now, here's the core pieces that I want you to look at, actually. When you think about creating church culture, the introduction, culture matters, okay? Piece here I've got to talk about is actually now culture creation. And the reason I emphasize culture matters for whatever it's worth is because for some reason we don't think it does. I don't want to put that on people. I'm just saying that too often it's just shoved off to the side, but it matters. Okay, now, but what if it's, okay, so we've decided, at least I've decided it's important. Well, okay, so now what? How do you go about actually creating this? Think mission. I know some of you here have to have real struggles thinking about, okay, so I get it. Culture, values, core values, virtues, et cetera, et cetera. But I am now in Luverne in Poland and some of you all over the world at various places. And so how? Just exactly how does that work there? What should I do? Well, here's some ideas. Don't hear me as a fixer-upper. I know what your problem is, and I know how to fix it. That's not my point here, but I'll just pitch out to you some of the things that I've learned, and maybe we'll have a little space to talk about them. We'll see. So here's a fascinating thing. I grew up in my growing up years, I heard repeatedly, well, you know the problem with our churches is vision. We don't have vision. We have a problem with vision. I agree. Well, but let's take a look at it a little bit. So when I'm sharing this at Faith Builders with the leadership, with the Life and Leadership for Men, these next pieces really come from that. But what is it? Well, you have all of these on your slide. I walk through these one by one, just trying to help them to see that, well, to move from a position of vision to some kind of reality, there's actually a whole lot more nuts and bolts and pieces in there than what most people want to wrestle with. And you're just seeing that, so organization, and so on. You can do with that whatever you want. But after I do that, then my next question is, but what lies behind vision? You know what? If this vision question were just the question, and if there were a button on everybody around here that I could just walk around and push it, give them vision, well, I would just do that and be done with it, and then our problems would be solved, right? You can see the simplicity of my question here. It's like, well, vision does not just happen. Okay, what's behind it? And that's what I'd like to talk with you about. Values or vision behind vision, I call this. There's no crank on anybody that you can just crank up and get them going like a dynamo. Let me tell you a problem that bothers me. If you have a highly motivational speaker, you can get that highly motivational speaker up in front of people, and he can talk like mad. And at the end of that service, people are wound up tight. I've even seen this at revival services. You'll see quite a reaction and a very, very lots of people responding. I have nothing against that, except one thing. 2 weeks later, I want to know what has changed. My observation has been very, very often, very little has changed. again, don't hear me throwing stones at the effort that's being made there. There are some really, really wonderful things that have come out of such efforts. So that's not my goal here. But my goal is, or not my goal, my point is, that in general, that tends not to actually make that substantive, deep-rooted change. Discipling factors that need to happen for people to really to really grow. So here, vision behind vision. How do we get it to happen? So vision of the church, and I'm obviously headed this direction. Values. Vision grows out of values, not the other way around. Okay? If somebody becomes very deeply moved, they have a value, they love children, that's deeply implanted in them. Well, I can tell you already, they're going to have a vision about children's ministries that some of us don't have. Okay? And you can apply that. You can see how that's going to work over and over again. Well, here's the thing that's been helpful to me, to realize that the connection between values and vision actually comes in various ways. I have four of them here for you, and I need to hasten through them. So there are principle-driven values. There are cultural-driven values. And here I'm not actually thinking, I'm talking about larger culture. You realize that all of us are in a huge sea of culture that is just kind of moving, and we like to act as if we're sort of above it and beyond it, but that we really aren't. The example I like to use here, Brother Laverne, you know Jan Wierzchowski. A discussion I had with Jan a number of years ago, we were sitting at his front porch, front porch or wherever it was, I don't know what you call it, but we were sitting and talking. He doesn't mow his lawn. He's an old man now, so of course he's not. But back then he was capable, but he had this yard that had a few flowers and a few weeds and a few herbs, and I'm not quite sure what he kind of ate out of that thing somehow or another, quite a bit. This is Eastern Europe. Really fascinating. And the discussion went a little bit like this. He said, you know, I don't understand you Americans. He said, you know what? You go over there, you have these beautiful lawns, and they're an acre or maybe a half an acre or whatever. And he said, you go out there and you mow them off. And you clip them off, they're just really nice and even all the way across. And then a week later, you come back and you just do the same thing again. You just clip her off another time. And then a week later, you just do it another time. And he said, then you get so excited about it, you pour some fertilizer on top of it so it'll grow a little faster so that you can just do it a little bit more. And I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, well, I'm going to have to walk the sawdust trail here. You know, I got a little bit of a problem. I do that business of mowing off lawns and keeping up lawns and all that. If you know anything about Felsenheim, where I live, we try to keep after it a little bit. Why do I do that? It is a culture-driven value that I bought into. How's that for a confession? It's a culture-driven value that I bought into. And so I'm out there doing it. I have enough motivation because that's valuable enough to me that I have spent more money, and I want to talk about, on a lawnmower and on gasoline and on other things just to keep up with that value. Now, you just think about wherever that, put the shoe on wherever it fits. And just admit, a whole lot of what you do is driven by values. They're the secular values. They come from the secular kingdom. I knew we could start talking about the sports world, the athletics world, just a whole load of stuff really is driven because we bought into the values of those around us. Now, don't let me be mistaken. Some of those values are just okay. For example, to keep one's weight down is not a bad idea. That's become kind of a cultural value. Again, I chuck no stones. Just simply to say that there is a cultural value that the secular world is starting to push. Good eating, good habits, exercise, keep the weight down. I just use it as an example to say don't automatically think that just because it's cultural driven it's a bad thing. But it was healthy for me personally, to recognize that some of the things, maybe many of the things I do are driven right here. Well, the next one there, the hero-driven values, circle it. ladies and gentlemen, pastors here, this is so key. Your young folks, your children, live out of the values that their heroes have. I've talked to some of my children about this extensively. Just not because there was huge problems, but just kind of trying to think through it and see if I'm on the right track or whatever. I want to be very clear, because sometimes we live these dual lives. I did. Growing up as a youngster, I mean, you as a 16-year-older, I could sit in church and I could think basketball and football and a whole level of number. You wouldn't believe the number of things that went through my head back at that time. Well, why? Well, it was because I had a set of heroes that I had bought into, went to public schools and, you know, had all of these. And those, I'm picking up those values along the way, and had enough sense, I think, or at least my dad had enough sense to kind of direct me some other ways to help me not to become overwhelmed. So I kind of lived, I just want to admit, not, I wasn't overwhelmed by those heroes, but I was being deeply influenced by them. Okay, and I think a lot of our young people find ourselves in that conflicted place. They really do. They're good people a lot of times, wanting to go good directions. But here, somehow caught up with the development of heroic people, that the values that are dictated coming out of that are very, very different. And they can feel a conflict, sometimes overwhelmed by it. Liturgy-driven values, those are just habits, really. This is amazing. I grew up on a dairy farm and milk cows. I didn't have a love-hate relationship with them. I had kind of a really neutral relationship. Kind of liked them, kind of didn't like them. Wasn't sure if I wanted to farm. I came within a whisker of farming, doing dairy farming. Right now, I'm glad I'm not. For those of you who know anything about it, the prices are really terrible. But at any rate, so when I got married, that was kind of the end of milking cows. I could not believe, like about 2 or 3 years later, my brother asked me if I would do his milking on, I don't know, for a week or so. He was going somewhere. And, you know, I went back down there, walked into the barn, and that smell, everything came rushing back in a tremendous nostalgic form. And it was like, wow, why am I not farming? It's a very, very... Milking was a liturgy for us. It was a habit. It's what we did. And there were certain things. There was a certain culture grew up around milking alongside of my dad in this cow stable. We didn't do it the modern way. We didn't have any self-milkers, that's for sure. And I learned politics, and I learned theology, and I learned a whole load of things there just in that barn between those cows as a dad and I and my brothers milked and did this. And I was powerfully attracted to it. I couldn't believe the amount of value that actually was there. But it was because of them. We need to keep going. Now, what you have on your paper there, I believe, is this. So, foreign mission, education, children's ministry, I don't have time to walk through all that, but what's helpful here is many of you would find yourselves attracted to different things here. Maybe prison ministry, maybe education like I was, some to children's ministries and so on, but much of that's driven from behind. It's not my main point today. Behind values, here's why I like history. So if you're following my sequence here, vision is absolutely a must for church building. Behind vision is values. Behind values, what creates them? Well, story. Imagination. Story stirring the imagination, observed culture. I'd like to take more time to talk about this one, but I'm not going to, except to say that if you want to affect a church in a certain direction, give them the stories. I listened to a podcast here a number of years ago, and it's fascinating. I was an unbeliever. But he was explaining why the gay community has had such effectiveness in what they have presented to the world, to culture in general, and how they've kind of won that war, so to speak, to gain their place. And his conclusion was, well, they told a better story in the end. It's really a fascinating thing to think about. Story leads to heroes. So Dirk Willems. Every child should hear the story of Dirk Willems. It is better than the story of Dwight D. Eisenhower. Respect Dwight D. Eisenhower. Not wanting to run him down. Respect there. But Dirk Willems has a better story. I want my children to have Dirk Willems as a hero. I want them to respect Dwight D. Eisenhower. But I do not want them to hold Dwight D. Eisenhower at the level of hero, at the hero level that they would Dirk Willems. I just give that as a simple example to say, look, remember, what we have the capacity to manage is the soil. Okay? Try story. Works powerfully. Heroes to values. Here you go. If you change a person's values, you will change their passion and their vision and impact in the long run. I have some more pieces to go to. So now here is a list. And if I'm preaching or teaching a series on this discussion, we take a lot of time with this. But remember that culture is an array of love values. Okay? And I think they turned out to be expressed in a number of ways, but here's just a list of them. Okay? Song. Representative of the arts. Story. Our heroes. Worship. Acts of corporate unity. Education, which defines the curriculum. And I have stories for all of these, but we won't be able to go there. Aesthetics, our definitions of beauty, a big one here. Far bigger than what it looks, than what meets the eye. If a young lady is trained and taught that eyeshadow and a number of other things really is beautiful, and if, in fact, the young men in your community also believe that's beautiful, I know the end of that story. There needs to be some pushback there. I'm telling you, it matters how we define beauty. It matters pretty deeply. Okay, stewardship. I'm much impressed with the rise among us of interest in business and actually business models that touch the lives of that create platforms for our missions to operate on. Thinking deeply about this, really am. Ask me sometime, and we'll have a conversation for about 2 hours about this. In short, it feels to me as though we have ended up using a Protestant model for missions. Don't hear me throwing a stone at the Protestant model. But it's not a model that fits us well. A model that fits us far better is community, a thriving community, kind of not self-sufficient, but working and helping each other, blessing each other, so forth and so on. We're businessmen. I've come to believe that I think our missions would actually work better if they were self-sufficient, business-oriented, in the sense of being community-oriented, et cetera, et cetera. You can see I'm opening a can of worms here. But I'll just let it rest for a little bit and just plant that seed, see how it grows in the soil here. Okay? A tradition. I just happen to be a person. In fact, don't forget something. Tradition is very, very powerful in culture. You did not hear me say that all traditions are perfect or anything like that, but tradition is powerful. I told you I'd be defensive, right? You can get me to defend traditions really fast. Why? Well, because I happen to know that deeply rooted in traditions are values, always. We may have forgotten them. We may have lost them somewhere along the line and forgot to connect the dots, okay? But the truth is they're there. You take Christmas, for example, in general culture. If you think about Christmas in Western culture, that's a tradition. a deep tradition that actually caused almost the entire Western world to stop what they're doing for about a week and to get together as families. And of course, there are things about it that we don't think are so good and all that. But you know what? If you removed that tradition, if you suddenly magically could just reach in and take that Christmas tradition out of Western culture, pull it out, pitch it, and have the memory forgotten, would that be good? I doubt it. At least not without some correction, because that's at least one time when around the world they tried to do something different to what they've done before. And sometimes there's some great reconciliations. I know that there's also some other issues involved there too. Tradition is powerful. No culture is a culture unless it has boundaries. Every culture has boundaries. You remove the boundaries, it's no longer a culture. You did not hear me say that you can just make endless boundaries and fix your cultures and do all that. That's not my point. My point, though, is if you think that you can somehow, by removing the boundaries, that you open the culture, you open the church or the culture to some grand things, think twice. Boundaries define cultures. And it's very, very important to know them. You can see that I've highlighted love and identity and belonging. Why did I do that? Well, if you look at the next set of slides, you'll see a kind of repeat this, but I put those pieces of culture there to the right of vision of church that we just briefly looked at. And in addition to that, it's identity and belonging. What does a culture do for you? What does church culture do for you? Think of your home church right now. Think about where you grew up. Consider this. Consider your mission. The church that some of you are laboring in right now. You're in Indochina, or I don't know where you may be. Think of that. What's the end result that you want? I think I'm right on this. We want an identity. We want people to belong there. In fact, what I know is if they don't belong there, they're not going to stay there. Okay, that sense of belonging needs to grow. Well, let me ask you this. So maybe you're from, I don't know, California. Why do you belong there? What makes that have a sense of belonging? I'll let you answer the question for yourself. When people ask you, who are you? And incidentally, the two questions that psychologists say that are really high on the list for any healthy psychosis, wrong terminology there, but any health of the mind, you have to be able to answer the question, who am I? And to whom do I belong? So now think about it. To build healthy churches, this really in the end has to be, this question has to be wrestled with. And so in a foreign culture, it seems to me as though this question really comes up big. To create an identity and to create a belonging. And you did not even hear me say that necessarily has to be the conservative Anabaptist model. Of course, I believe that's a very good one. Okay. But my point here is a church will not be a church until there's an identity. We know who we are. And second of all, the sense of belonging. I belong here. Those two questions must be answered. They're hard questions to answer. Think backwards, though, now. If that's what we want, in the end, if we think this direction, what you see me doing here is just pointing out that there is a flow, there's a movement that actually creates that identity and that belonging. And you can't just talk people into it. You can't just baptize them into it, actually. Now, that baptism needs to be a part of that identity and that belonging. But there's no way that you can just... I can't believe the amount of work that it actually takes just in our own communities. I'm a pastor at Meadville Mennonite Chapel, and the people who attend there have come from I don't know how many different places, but they're all, most of them, no, they're not all. There's a few of them, about three or four, from non-Mennonite background. The rest of them are from Mennonite background. the hard work to actually take a Mennonite from Idaho and a Mennonite from Pennsylvania and a Mennonite from Texas and put them in one church and create an identity is unbelievable. It is unbelievable, the effort and the energy that it takes, but it shouldn't surprise us. Look at this stuff. Because all those people are bringing these various things into this one church where this group now is trying to create an identity and a belonging. Well, transfer that now to a foreign land. And you just multiply that whole, I don't know if it's a problem or what, that phenomena. You multiply that, I don't know, exponentially at least. And this is hard, hard work. But I want to be very clear. I think we have the tools to do it. We have the Holy Spirit. We have the Scriptures. I think we're on a learning curve. Somebody asked me the other day, so how do you feel about the church? And I said, well, it depends what time of the day you ask me. Because sometimes I'm like, oh boy, it's all going down the tube. And the next day I think, you know what, we'll find our way through this. And I really do, I think in my better moments, have confidence just looking at a group of people like this. Hey, we're human. We're going to make mistakes. But if we can get this, if we can somehow get a hold of the, you can't play games with this type of an idea. You can't just think, okay, I'm going to, let me stop and back up just a little bit. I think sometimes we don't ask ourselves this question. We start back here somewhere and just let it happen however it's going to happen. I would suggest to you actually do some thinking out here. What do you want? What identity and belonging do you want? And then begin to think backwards. Here are the ways in which you actually can build toward that identity and belonging. Okay, I was determined to give... Gary, am I supposed to stop when? Now. Like now. Okay, I'm sorry. I wanted to give some space here for you all to give me 1 minute. I'll quit. Here's a little bridge. I love this bridge. I want to make sure you get this little piece. Committed to Jesus as Lord. So from community diversity to creating a culture of identity and belonging, here's a bridge. The bridge is held up by this commitment to Jesus as Lord. Here's an old word, but it's the right word. Here's what I would urge all of us to do. There's one word that we use that's not on your paper, but we use sometimes that captures a goal for me in the congregation where I minister, and that's Galassonite. You realize that in the Christian community, this is it's a lost concept. I have to stop. You have some papers there with some of the stuff on it. I wrote it all there for you so that you could actually look at it and ponder it, consider it, and talk about it. God bless you.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.